suppose some people sort of might think at this age it's a bit of a cliche, you know, U2, Dublin, you know, like it's great for them, you know, they, you know, it's very easy, you know, to sort of say, oh, it's great to live here. But I mean, they are the facts. I mean, we don't have to live here. We could live other places and not have to pay the same amount of tax or whatever. We could, you know, just go away and live in New York. Mm. Well, it's the same sort of attitude as there is in Dublin. People just don't take that much notice. They're just not really that interested, you know?
Well, do you think that people within the business and on the periphery, etc., do take notice of the fact that previous Irish rock stars have always said they were going to do things for Dublin and put money back in and help bands and all the rest of it and that, which they never really got around to doing because they were too busy doing other things. Whereas you two, in quite a quiet way, but in an incredibly effective way, have done loads of things on that level. I'm not just talking about Mother Records.
Sure.
Loads of things on that level. Are you aware of the appreciation, like right across the board, from the industry, from everybody involved in music, from people who hire out gear to people who fix jack plugs on stage?
Yeah, there seems to be sort of a... I think people appreciate it, but I mean that's not why we do it. We're not looking for that. It's just like we grew up here, and when we were playing in the Dandelion Market and all that, there wasn't really anybody prepared to put their money where their mouth is, as you said. Mm. We sort of said, well, let's be different, let's do it, you know, let's actually put our money where their mouth is, and that's why we can live here. If we weren't like that, if we didn't, you know, care about this, like I say, if we didn't care about this country and actually do things, you know, I think people would just say, look, just, you know, why don't you just piss off?
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
It would be impossible to come on the radio and say, I love Dublin. Say, if you love Dublin so much, why don't you do something for it? You know?
Well, that last track we played from U2, which was Red Hill Mining Town, there's two things about that. First of all, the four of you are not the only people playing on that song.
No, there's the Arklow Silver Band, thanks Mike Laverne, they played on it as well, and they were directed by... by Paul Barrett and STS. He arranged and organised all that, and they were great.
Yeah. And the second thing is just to go back to that thing about the Irish thing. I mean, like right across the U2 thing involved, there's a lot of Irish people employed. The last time U2 were in here before you played Croke Park, the whole 4 years we were talking about the Cork Naffy and all that, and Joe was in.
Right. Yeah.
There's a quote from Joe in that I've heard back in Texas. This is one of the funniest things I've ever heard. But anyway, like he was in here, and. To take it one step further, the video for that song, Red Hill Mining Town, is done by another Irishman, which is Neil Jordan.
That's right, yeah.
So how did that one come about? You did that in London last week.
Yeah, I don't really know how it came about. I know Bono and Edge met Neil through Bono, because Bono lives in wherever he lives. And wherever he lives in that side of the city called Bray. And... Neil Jordan lives in a house directly beside it.
Yeah.
And they met, I think, down the supermarket or something like that,
and got talking
in the railway bar. And I don't know how it came about. Neil Jordan showed interest in doing a video because he hadn't done one before, and we were interested in him because of Mona Lisa and
Company of Wolves
and whatever,
Angel.
And Brazil. That's how that came together, and it was very interesting. I really enjoyed working with them.
Yeah, and also, just speaking of the videos, the first single, as I say, is going to be released, which I am going to play before the end of the program, is called With or Without You. I was down in Ardmore last week, and you were making that one there. So who was making that one?
Well, Myrt Avis from Wimmer Lane directed that, and with the assistance of a guy called Matt Mahern, who did the... cover of
Wide Awake in America. That's the photographer guy.
Yeah, and he's done a whole lot of videos himself, and basically what he was using was Super 8. And in the video, there's the band playing and Super 8 being shot on screens, and that's all by Matt. And we did that in Ardmore 2 days down there, and it worked out really well. I'm really pleased with it.
Yeah. So let's clear up something that happened last year, which was, like, we were just talking about Elton John there, actually, and then what happened to Boy George there some time ago as well, the British gutter press or whatever. There was a thing that was in about you about a year ago, or I don't know when it was, it was about a year ago, which is about your hands.
Yeah.
Now, let's just get started on that one, because it was you were in San Francisco during the US tour, and the doctor came along and said, yeah, there is something very bad with your hands, you were rushed off to hospital, you're going to have to take 2 weeks off, there was no way you were going to be able to take two weeks off, right? So, what happened? I mean, you couldn't cancel the gig, so you got painkillers to keep you going throughout the gig.
They gave me these great pills that if you take alcohol with them, make you feel very good. They just gave me painkillers, you know, so I went on stage, and... No, I don't mean that, honestly. Honestly, parents, I don't mean that. I took painkillers and they just took down the swelling. And I had my hand in a splint for the duration of the tour. And it was, I don't know how it how can I?
Well, it was like sort of tennis elbow in some ways for a tennis player. Like it's like drummers.
Yeah, it's just pushing your hand too far. And I think if there's, when I was a kid, I fell on glass or something like that. And I think there's still something cut in there, and people wanting to operate on it and all that sort of stuff. And I said no. Like I when I went to the original doctor, he said you should get this seen to and possibly operate it on. And I said no, just inject some cortisone into it, which he did, and I got 3 cortisone injections, and then was warned if I got any more that there wouldn't be any more effect. And then I was taking painkillers, and came back to Dublin. No, actually, when I was in came back to Dublin, still had a hassle with my hand. I read an article about Max Weinberg, drummer from Springsteen's band.
Yeah,
I rang him, asked him what he thought, and he recommended this doctor in New York. So when I was in going for the amnesty tour, I went to see this doctor, who again wanted to operate my hand. And in the meantime, I was seeing a guy called John Varian here, and he sort of said, it is possible you do need an operation, but he said, if you operate on your hand, it's possible that could do some other damage, or it will be exploratory and all that. So he's been helping me out trying to find machines that will like take down the swelling and all that sort of stuff.
Well, was it a big lesson you learned from Max Weinberg from the E Street Band? Because I mean, he's had 8 operations
on
his fingers.
Yeah.
So, like, was it a good, like, is he so similar?
Yeah.
Larry, watch yourself here.
Yeah, he really put it all into perspective. He said, look, you know, this is your livelihood, you know, and you got to take care of your hands. And it's something I didn't really think about before. And to see his fingers is something. I said he's got like two slits on each finger. And he was telling me when he was on the on this Born in the USA tour, just before they're about to go on the road, during rehearsals, his fingers started to cut and started to bleed, you know, and huge swellings in his hands and all that, and he wasn't going to be able to do the tour and whatever. And it scared me. It really did scare me. And in actual fact, they've opened a hospital in New York for musicians and tennis players and all that sort of stuff, and they just basically give lectures on how to protect your hands and things. And it's something you just don't think about, you know. You sort of think, you know, I'm in a rock and roll band, who wants to worry about this sort of stuff, you know.
At the same time, if there's something that's causing the tendons to swell, like, is it that you're really like scared in trying to avoid an operation?
Yeah, I am. I hate hospitals, and I don't want an operation.
Well, you mentioned the Irish doctor there, Varian.
Yeah.
He's been very good, I believe.
Yeah, he's been brilliant. He's a great guy, and he's been really helpful. And you know, it's really encouraging to meet somebody. You know, when I said, "Will I go and get acupuncture?" He said, "Yeah, go and get acupuncture. Try anything.
Yeah.
If you can avoid getting an operation, avoid it. Do anything." And like I said, get a machine, you know, to try and take down the swelling. Take pills, but avoid an operation. And it's great to meet, because usually, you know, surgeons and that, their immediate thing is, oh, let's open it up and, you know, explore. And like, it's just no way I want to do that.
Well, did you have any problems during the recording of the album then?
Just had a few problems. You see, and also I ride motorbikes a bit, and you know, from using your hand on revving it up or changing gear and whatever, that started to affect my hand as well. So I had to like be careful on that. So there was a combination of things.
Well, do you find that Max Weinberg is trying to tell you that, you know, like, it's important to tell other drummers about this?
And that's why this hospital has said it. It's actually, they give lectures to musicians and to anybody, and basically they want to spread the word that, you know, if you are going to hit drums hard, and he does and I do, and that just got to take care, you know?
Speaking of hitting drums hard then, and you've always said, like, that's one thing you'd say to people who want to know about drums, just hit the damn thing.
Yeah, people want to give you, you know, want advice, you know, what sort of technical advice you give? I don't have any technical advice. If you want to hit the drums, hit it, you know, with everything you got, you know, 99% on and off the field.
Well, like, if somebody comes up to you over in America and says things like, you know, Larry, you got a really unique style, you're just like, oh, what the hell is this guy?
Yeah, I go, that's exactly what I say. Like, people, I believe there was a program on TV about a year ago. There were two people discussing the drum lines from Pride, and there was some sort of paradiddle and triplets and something, and somebody came up and said, well, that's great, I'd love to see that written down, sheet music, you know, on paradiddles. And I was it's like, God,
it's the first
I heard, but I've never heard of anyone to speak. And that's great, I'm glad somebody's taking the time to think about
well,
it.
Well, like, that thing though about hitting the drums hard, I mean, I would have thought that might have been more, say, a few years ago than now, because, I mean, you also hit them soft, Larry.
Yes, I do.
I mean, like, for instance, like, listening to music, say, over the last 4 or 5 years, as opposed to previous years, would you listen to songs for that sort of light and shade a bit more? So that idea of, oh, I don't know, as an older listener or as a more mature listener, or now as somebody who's been through it all, that you might listen for these sort of subtle differences and, like, leaving lots of gaps, like a lot of the drummers we mentioned earlier don't do.
Yeah, but, I mean, it's like you said earlier on, it's like serving the music.
Yeah.
Like, if the song is a song like Bad, you don't go and hit it, you know, go 100 miles an hour at the kit. You know, you serve the music. If that's to play soft, then you play soft. If it's to play hard, you play hard. But if you play hard, you hit very hard. Well, I do anyway. I mean, that's not, that's not to say you've got to, but, that's the way I play.
But is it fair to say that, like, during recording in particular, that you do leave an awful lot of gaps? You play a lot of notes that you don't play a lot of notes that a lot of other drummers would have played.
Yeah.
And just leave it loose.
Yeah, just leave it loose. Serve the song.
Well, then what about the sound, trying to get it in the studio? I mean, like, for instance, in Windmill Lane, you've done an awful lot of songs in the hallway of Windmill Lane.
Yeah.
It's sort of the high ceiling, the solid stone walls, and the microphones coming downstairs and all that sort of thing. I mean, like, did that sort of just come around by accident, or you realise you were looking for a particular sound and you were just determined to get it?
Originally it was just by accident. There was a snare drum in the hallway and I just started hitting something. That's a great sound. Excuse me. It sounded great, so we set up the kit there and then we started to record. But there is definitely a sound that I'm interested in that I like to hear. I like to hear live drums. I don't like studio sound and drums. You know, and I won't spend a day on a bass drum sound. I just refuse to. When we go into the studio, Tom works on the drums and he'll go in at 11 o'clock and he'll get the drum sound and then I'll come in and I'll play. I'm not interested in sitting down, you know what sounds great. That's not where it's at, you know.
But what about the idea then of using brushes? I mean, like, 2 years ago, if I'd asked that question, I probably would have said, yeah, great, you know, but everybody's at it now, aren't they?
Yeah. Well, actually, Pete DeFreitas from Echo and the Bunnymen started
it. They had a full album.
Yeah, they had a full album on it, so. But I was using them around the same time.
Yeah. Okay, I don't know what I was going to say next, actually. Yeah, there was one thing about drumming as well, one last one, which was that somebody said to me, who's a drummer, and, like, I wouldn't have noticed this at all, that if you take the Unforgettable Fire, that there might have been a lot of sort of, I don't even know what oriental drumming sound might be like, but there might have been a lot of that sort of influence in that when you went to Japan, say, you didn't stay in the normal rock and roll hotels. You didn't do a Live at the Budokan album either, that sort of thing. So, I mean, like, you went and stayed in traditional oriental houses, you ate the food, you sat on the floor that way, everything else. Do you find that would have been sort of an influence right across the board for the whole four of you from you two? And even that you might have picked up some sort of rhythmic Japanese type?
I'm sure you do. It's not a conscious thing, but I'm sure you do pick up, you know. I mean, even on this record, I mean, in the guitar playing, you hear some blues influences which you've never heard before. Now, if you ask Edge what he's been listening to, he say, well, let's listen to some blues. Now, he wouldn't have consciously said, this is a good blues thing to rip off. It just sort of goes into your subconscious or whatever. So I'm sure it does, but it's not a conscious thing.
Well, I get the impression when people really praise drummers, they're talking about jazz drummers. Well, I get the impression that jazz would be second to your sort of R&B type drummers. So you'd prefer a good rock and roller drummer.
Yeah, prefer a good rock and roller.
Just one who whacks it out.
Yeah.
Okay, listen, let's whack out some music here, which is this next song here, which I think is a classic as well, London Calling. Any specific reason or anything, no?
This is my favourite Clash song. I love the video as well in the ride.
Oh, yeah, right. Well, okay, here it is. Eagle-eared listeners will have realised that the songs we've been playing since 8 o'clock have been in perfectly pristine condition, but that one there is absolutely in rag order. So, Larry, what the hell were you doing with that album? You were frying eggs on it?
Frying eggs on it. Sorry, listen.
You had two numbers on The Clash there, Rock the Casbah and London Calling, and you had Christy Moore and you also got The Dubliners there. Yeah. So, what about Christy and The Dubliners? Do you remember them well? Is that it?
I remember them well. Well, I don't remember The Dubliners that well. It's just recently I've started to listen to them and all that, and I really appreciate Lou Kelly and all that, and it's that song in particular. I remember when I was a youngster, hearing some people on a bus actually singing it, and it means something to me.
Yeah.
And also Christy, Only Our Rivers Run Free as well.
Well, one other Irish musician that you've worked with in the last year is Paul Brady. How did that one come about? Did he just ask you to come in and play the drums?
Basically, that's what it was.
Yeah.
And I mean, I like Paul.
Yeah.
I enjoyed doing it. It was the first session I ever. A session, if you can use that word. It's the best session I ever did, and you know I'm not very good at sessions. You know, I'm not good at like coming in and just playing over somebody else's music. I much prefer to be involved there from the beginning, but it worked out well.
Yeah. So what about another session that you've been asked to do? This is a biggie. I mean, it's a good one, isn't it? I mean, Patti Smith is coming back.
That's right.
And she's going to make a new album.
Well, she's actually in the middle of it at the moment.
And what's that one all about?
Well, she got her old band together, and the drummer's got to go away and get married or something like that. And there are two or three tracks that need some playing on. And I was talking to Jimmy Iovine, and he just asked me if I'd be interested. He had mentioned to Patty about getting somebody in, and she had said she didn't want a session musician in, and he had said, what about somebody from U2? And she said, well, how about giving it a try? So I'm planning to do that when I go to America.
Yeah.
In March, or the end of March, beginning of April.
Mm. So there's one other thing as well. When I was with the band the other day on Wednesday, Bono, The Edge and Adam were there, and in walks this travelling salesman, which was Larry Mullen. Mm-hmm. And you had all this stuff under your arm. So it's all the merchandising stuff of U2.
That's right.
Like from T-shirts to rucksacks, the works, right?
Yeah.
So is that what you look after with U2? Do you look after that from the word go?
Well, it's an area that most bands just don't take care of. They just... somebody else comes in, does the designs for the T-shirts and sells them, and you end up with pretty bad quality stuff at outrageous prices. And I just decided that it'd be nice to do good T-shirts that, you know, if I was a fan of a band, I'd like to wear. So I just take care of that. I just make sure that the quality of this stuff is good, and that the pictures that go on the T-shirts and all that is of good quality.
Well, most of the pictures are the same as are on the album, Joshua Tree,
yeah,
stuff and all that.
That's right.
So what about the idea of, like, is it that you notice the sort of rip-off stuff more at the gigs than anywhere else?
Yeah, I think it goes right down the line. I mean, it's not only merchandising, it goes down to ticket prices, all that sort of stuff. I try and get involved in that to make sure that's, you know...
People aren't putting money in the back
pocket.
Yeah,
and also, as regard gigs as well, like, if you do a small gig, it means bootleggers... get triple the price, you know, for the ticket. Like, people are always saying, why don't you play a club, or why don't you do this, or why don't you do that, you know, or play a small theatre or something like that. And in some ways, it's to protect the people who, you know, the real fans of your music, you know. And so it's just something I keep an eye on, that I take care of, because the other guys, you know, they mightn't have as much time. But I mean, Adam looks after Mother and just watches all that goes on there. And, you know, as Bono says, Edge is the musical director, and Bono's the dosser, you know?
Yeah, yeah. Okay, well, listen, we've still got two tracks to play from the U2 album, The Joshua Tree. So tell us about this next one that you picked. This one, I'm picking three, you're picking one. So what about this one here? Okay. Exit.
Yeah, it was a song that was sung quickly. Actually, we played it today in rehearsal, and I just think it's a... You know, it's in typical U2 fashion. It was done in 3 or 4 days. You know, it was written in 3 or 4 days and recorded in an hour, you know.
Yeah. Okay, well, here it is. Second last track on side two from The Joshua Tree from U2. This is Exit. Working Class Hero, John Lennon song, performed by Marianne Faithfull there. And before that, you heard Exit from the Joshua Tree album. So would you really prefer that version of Working Class Hero, Larry, to John Lennon?
Well, I'm not that familiar with John Lennon's, I must admit.
Mm-hmm.
I know it, but I'm not as familiar with it as I am with that. Mm-hmm. I love that song.
So listen, look, we're coming near the end of the programme. I still have one more track to play from the Joshua Tree. So you're a bit sort of, not narked, but you're a bit something there. So
yeah, I mean, just because it's your birthday, man, you know, you want to do an interview. I came in to play records, man. Not talk about
you. Oh, yeah,
too.
By the way, thanks to the millions you sent in cards for my birthday. It was great.
All two of you.
Me mother. So tell me something then about that. I mean, like, for instance, if I say that next Monday night in the programme I'm going to play all the other stuff that you brought in, just back to back, which is a lot of the stuff I play anyway, except for a lot of the country stuff, which I wouldn't necessarily know.
Sure, yeah. Now, there's a lot of stuff I sort of put on a list. I mean, it was a stupid thing to do. I should have realised that you'd nab me on questions about my private life.
But they are tame boys,
right? Now, you know, there's a whole lot of records and stuff that I, you know, would like to have played and... You know,
well, listen, take a look through the list then that you gave me as well. I mean, for instance, you had Bob Dylan with God on Our Side. I mean, why that track in particular?
I just think it says an awful lot, you know, the idea of the Germans and the British going out, you know, and each of them, you know, with God on their side. We could spend all night doing this type.
Yeah, and shipbuilding as well.
Yeah, shipbuilding by Elvis Costello would be a favorite.
It's his version rather than Robert Wyatt's.
Yes.
Yeah, and you also picked Air from Talking Heads. I like the fact you picked one from Fear of Music. It's probably the best album.
Yeah, it's a great record.
Have you heard the last album by...
Yeah, I don't like it.
No, I don't like it at all. Yeah. So So I could go through this whole list, but maybe it'd be better if I just played it. I'll say there is one song which I haven't even got with me, which is terrible, which maybe you brought, I don't know.
What is it?
Which is, like, I remember in the hot press, in the, what do you call it, the Mad Hatter's thing, Bob, you have to pick your favourite song.
Fields, yeah.
So I picked Strawberry Fields Forever.
Right, yeah.
So, like, I mean, like, you were a little chiseling with that one.
Yeah, no, I don't remember it when it was released. I just, again, it's like about 4 years ago.
Yeah.
And we're hearing it on the radio. Yeah, you know, there's a lot of, like, all the things like the Suite and all that sort of stuff. I mean, they're not my musical tastes now. What they say to me is that, like, they bring me back to, you know, when I started playing the drums and when I, you know, and all those sort of things. They bring back memories of that. So that's why I play them. So basically, people out there, you know, I've got lots of really hip things in here as well.
Okay, well, listen, we're going to hear them on Monday. But look, we better play this last one from the Joshua Tree.
Yeah,
and this one is going to be the single,
right?
Called With or Without You. Yes. All right, With or Without You is the name of that song there. That's the final one, number four, that I played tonight of the 11 tracks altogether on the Joshua Tree. Now, we've gone past 10 o'clock, but just very briefly, I just want to say thanks very much indeed, Larry, for dropping in to say hello to us. And sorry you couldn't get through all the records, but we will get through them on Monday. And also, you're going to give one record to Tony to play between 10 and half 10. He's going to play it, aren't you, Tony? Yeah, good man yourself. Fair play. And that's the Blues Brothers. So listen, thanks very much for coming in, right?
No, thanks, Dave.
And have a good time over the next week, talking to all the press around the world. And have a wonderful time around the world.
I'd just like to say one thing. Louise, I didn't forget about yourself and Bruce. I really didn't. Just Dave just wouldn't give me the time to play the track for you both.
Oh, shucks. Okay, well, listen, we'll see you again next time, Larry. Right, and best of luck with the album when it comes out. So, I...